You're listening to the podcast of Village Church in Burbank, California. To learn more about Village Church, visit our website at villagechurchburbank.org. We hope you enjoy today's message.
Each week I've chosen a song from his vast catalog that we're going to show at the very beginning of the sermon. And then I'll come back and preach my normal sermon. But we will, over the course of the sermon, we'll interact with a theme and the lyrics from that song for that week. So this is track two. And the song that I've chosen for this weekend, it comes from his 13th, it's actually the 13th and final studio album released by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And it's called Hypnotic Eye. And believe it or not, if you're a Tom Petty fan, this might surprise you. That album from 2014, it is the only one out of the 13 Tom Petty and Heartbreakers albums to reach number one on the charts. It debuted at number one on the Billboard 200. So it was a really good album. It released to critical acclaim. A lot of people love it. And it produced five singles. And what I've chosen for this weekend is the fourth song, the fourth single, the fourth of the five singles from that album. And it's called Forgotten Man. Forgotten Man. Now, what I've discovered about Tom Petty is towards the end of his career, he decided, I'm going to stop making music videos. I'm not going to make any more music videos. It's a waste of time. Nobody watches them. So I don't have a music video, even though this was a single. So what I've done is I've taken the video from a live performance that he did in the Heartbreakers just a few years ago on Jimmy Kimmel Live. But what you're going to hear is the studio version of the song that I've dubbed on top of it. It's the same tempo, so it'll follow along. But you'll notice, like, his lips don't always match the lyrics, or the guitar doesn't match what they're doing on the guitars. Don't freak out about that. I'm just telling you in advance, you're hearing the studio version on top of the live version. But it just gives you something to look at, and you'll see the lyrics on the bottom of the screen. It's a very simple song, less than 3 minutes. Watch this video, and I'll be back to preach. Everybody's awake? Wonderful. You know, I am someone who lives in the Gospels, the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I read the entire Bible. In fact, I read the whole Bible probably at least two times a year. So I'm always reading the entire thing, but I live in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's where I live. And one of the things that you notice in the Gospels, all four of them emphasize this, is that Jesus had a reputation for giving his attention to and ministering to forgotten people, forgotten men, forgotten women. You know, all of us here, if we just sat here and came up with a list together, we could probably list at least a couple dozen examples in the Gospels. I think of, when I think of forgotten men, I think of like the demonized man in the land of the Gerasenes, where they just chained him up. I mean, obviously, this is a guy they want to forget about. They just want him to be eliminated. They just don't want to think about him. I think about forgotten people like the man with the withered hand, the lepers that Jesus healed, the paralytic. I think of forgotten women like the Samaritan woman, like the woman with the issue of blood, the woman caught in the act of adultery, the sinful woman who anointed Jesus' feet at the home of Simon the Pharisee and created this huge scandalous moment. The Gospels are filled with examples virtually on every page of forgotten men and women who are included in the Jesus story. But when I hear this song by Tom Petty, he sings about this forgotten man who has borne the anger and the scorn of other people. He has had pain inflicted upon him at the hands of human beings around him. And yet, the song kind of, to me, has this hint of defiance and determination to it. And he owns it. And so when I hear this song, Forgotten Man, I think of one particular forgotten man in the Gospels. And his story is recorded in Mark chapter 10 at the very end. Let's read it together, beginning in verse 46. It says, they came to Jericho as Jesus and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho. Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out even more loudly, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stood still and said, call him here. And they called the blind man, saying to him, take heart, get up, he is calling you. So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, what do you want me to do for you? The blind man said to him, my teacher, let me see again. Jesus said to him, go, your faith has made you well. Immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way. Well, our story this morning takes place in Jericho. I've been to Jericho a couple times. Very interesting place. For one thing, it's one of the oldest cities in the world. Did you know that Jericho has been continuously inhabited for 11,000 years? Think about that. It's also, in terms of elevation, the lowest city on earth. It's 1,000 feet below sea level, right there by the Dead Sea. And Jesus happens to be passing through Jericho. What's happened is he's on this long journey from way up north in Galilee, and he's headed ultimately to Jerusalem. In fact, within a few days of this event, Jesus will be crucified. So all the big stuff's about to happen. But he's been traveling on this long journey from up north in Galilee. And if you're in Galilee and you're trying to get to Jerusalem, there are two primary routes you would take. And this one route, which was a popular route, is you would just follow along the Jordan Valley, right by the Jordan River, and you would just follow it all the way down south until you get to Jericho. And once you get to Jericho, you make a hard right turn, and you head west 15 miles, and you're in Jerusalem. But it's not an easy 15 miles. Jerusalem is 2,500 feet above sea level. So within that 15-mile journey, you're going up 3,500 feet. So you're going up, up, up. It's a really grueling hike, you might say. So once you get to Jericho, you want to stop there for a day or two and just rest and refresh because What's ahead of you is a long, long journey to Jerusalem uphill. And so Jesus is there in Jerusalem. It's kind of the last pit stop before he's going to make his triumphal entry into Jerusalem. And there are likely thousands and thousands, probably tens of thousands of people who have swarmed Jericho at this time for two reasons. Number one, it's on the eve of Passover week. Remember, Jesus was crucified during Passover. And Passover is one of the three biggest events in Jewish faith, life, and culture. And everybody, if possible, wants to be in Jerusalem for Passover. It's, you want to make this big pilgrimage and be there in the city. And so you've got hundreds of thousands of Jews from all over the world who have made their long journey to Jerusalem to be there for Passover. But on top of that, this particular Passover, many of these Jewish pilgrims have come to believe that this Jesus of Nazareth, this prophet, this miracle worker, they've come to believe that he is their Messiah. For hundreds of years, the Jewish prophets had announced that there's coming a Messiah that God's going to raise up. He's going to be a saving king in the line of David. And when he comes, he's going to set things right. He's going to rescue us from our oppressors. And he's going to reestablish the kingdom in peace and righteousness. It's an eternal kingdom. So they were looking for and longing for this Messiah for hundreds of years. And some of these Jews there in Jericho, many of them have come to believe that this Jesus guy is indeed the true son of David, the true Messiah, their king. And they're expecting, this is their assumption, that when Jesus makes his way into Jerusalem over the next day or two, when he finally arrives, that's the moment he's going to literally become king. He's going to take the throne, literally, and establish once again the kingdom of Israel and reestablish their national sovereignty and kick some Roman behind. That's what they're expecting. So there's a lot of excitement, a lot of electric atmosphere going on, and adrenaline is pumping. So in this moment in Jericho, we meet a guy, a forgotten man, a blind beggar named Bartimaeus, meaning son of Timaeus. And Bartimaeus is sitting by the gate of Jericho, which is a really good place for a beggar to be. I mean, it's the eve of Passover. If you've got thousands and thousands of people flooding in and out of the city every day, no better place for a beggar to be than right there at the gate. In fact, I would imagine Bartimaeus is not the only beggar sitting there. But Bartimaeus, even though he's blind and he's been doing this a while, he senses there's something different about this moment. Like, he's probably been there for many Passovers, you know, as Jewish pilgrims are traveling into his city. But there's things have like cranked up a few notches this year. There's an added excitement and anxiety in the air that he picks up on. And he asks somebody, what's happening right now around me? Why is it so chaotic and crazy right now? And somebody tells him, well, haven't you heard Jesus of Nazareth, that great prophet, that miracle worker from Galilee? He's here right now in Jericho. In fact, he's about to pass right in front of us. And Bartimaeus, just like everybody, he's heard about all of the stories regarding this famous prophet. Jesus by now is the famous man amongst the Jews by far. And so he's considering, this is my chance. And so Bartimaeus, he can't see anything, so he doesn't know if and when Jesus is passing in front of him. He just starts to shout out at random points, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. That term, son of David, is a messianic title. Remember, the Messiah figure, it was believed, would be from the line of David. And so son of David became synonymous with Messiah or king, which is kind of a dangerous, risky thing for somebody to be shouting out publicly towards someone, because at this point, the Jewish people have a king of sorts. His name is Herod Antipas. He's really kind of the king over this particular region. But the problem with Herod Antipas, among other things, is that he's not from the line of David. So he has no prophetic scriptural claim to the throne. And so Bartimaeus very boldly just begins to shout out, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. And he keeps shouting. And eventually the crowd tries to shut him up. And they say, that's enough, man. You won't stop shouting. We're trying to have a nice little parade here. Keep it quiet. Keep it nice and Episcopalian, you know. Zip it up. And like I said, Bartimaeus, he's determined. He's defiant. He's not going to let anybody get in the way between him and his encounter with Jesus. So he continues to shout it out. Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Son of David, have mercy on me. And as Jesus is walking by, you got to imagine there's hundreds and hundreds of people pressing around him. A lot of them, I'm sure, chanting his name, singing his praise, trying to get his attention. But when this blind beggar, when this forgotten man shouts, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me, Jesus stops in his tracks. And he says, you know that guy over there that keeps shouting, Son of David, have mercy? Call him over. And all of a sudden, the crowd's attitude towards Bartimaeus changes. And they're like, be of good cheer. This is your lucky day. The master's calling you. And Bartimaeus throws off his cloak. He's like, me? Yeah, you. And so Bartimaeus goes to Jesus. And watch this. Jesus takes the initiative. And this is what Jesus says. Remember this. Very important. This is the key. Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? And Bartimaeus says, Lord, that I might recover my sight. And Jesus says, your faith has made you well. And instantly Bartimaeus is healed. He regains his sight. And it says he followed him on the way. Now, there's so many really, really good things here to really poke into. But I want to show you something this morning that I think is so often overlooked when people study this story. And I think it's actually one of the main things that Mark wants us to see. There's a reason why Mark deliberately places this story right here. I mean, he's got all these stories that he's telling that lead to the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. 16 chapters worth of stories, but there's a reason why the story of blind Bartimaeus goes right here. And the reason why is because Mark wants us to compare and contrast this conversation between Bartimaeus and Jesus with the conversation that happens right before this event, in the passage right before involving James and John with Jesus. Right before Mark tells us this story, James and John, nicknamed the Sons of Thunder, two of Jesus' disciples, they approach Jesus with a request. I want us to look at it in verse 35. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him and said to him, watch this, teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. So notice the thrust of their prayer. Let's think of it in context of prayer this morning. We want you to do whatever we ask. Jesus, we want you to do our bidding. We want you to do whatever we ask. Oh yeah, I wonder what that might be. And they say, here's what we want. We know that you're about to come into Jerusalem, and when you get to Jerusalem, you're going to become king. You're going to come into your kingdom. And whenever you come into your kingdom, Jesus, we would like to sit on the thrones to your right and left. Now, you get the big throne in the middle. You're the one that's in charge. No question about that. We just want to be in your cabinet. We just want to be Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense. So that's what we want. We want to be to your right and left when you become king. Jesus looks at him and says, you don't even know what you're asking. He says, are you prepared to drink from this cup I'm about to drink from and go through this baptism that I'm about to experience? In other words, are you willing and able to go through what I'm about to go through next week? And without any thought, without any question, without any reflection, they say, yes, we're able. And Jesus says, you know what? There's going to come a time when you will drink from this cup of pain. And you will experience this baptism of suffering I'm about to go through. But as for this moment right here, it's not for me to decide who's going to sit at my right and my left. That's for who it's been prepared for. Now, you understand by now what he's talking about, right? When Jesus gets to Jerusalem within a few days, indeed, he is going to become king. And he is going to come into his kingdom. It's just that his coronation is going to be by crucifixion. And his throne is going to be his cross. And his crown is going to be made out of thorns. And those who sit on the thrones to his right and left are the criminals crucified on either side of him. This is how Jesus becomes king. And this is what his kingdom looks like. And so James and John, what they're really asking without realizing it is, Jesus, can we be crucified next to you? That's why Jesus looks at them and says, you don't even know what you're asking. The very next story that Mark tells us is the story of blind Bartimaeus. And he wants us to compare these two conversations. James and John, his disciples, Their prayer is basically this self-centered, agenda-based prayer. Their agenda is they want to become great in the conventional sense of the word. They want to be great in power and prestige and position. So they say, Jesus, we want you to do whatever we ask. Right after Bartimaeus, this blind beggar, this forgotten man, his prayer is just a humble plea for mercy. Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. That gets Jesus' attention. Jesus calls him over and says, what do you want me to do for you? And Bartimaeus gets it. You see the comparison there? James and John say, we want you to do whatever we ask, and they get rebuffed. Bartimaeus cries out for mercy. Jesus says, at his invitation, what do you want me to do for you? And he gets healed. I think that's fascinating. As I said, I don't think it's any accident at all that these two stories, these two examples of prayer, are placed back to back in Mark's account. Because listen, the primary purpose of prayer is not to get God to do whatever we think God ought to do, but to be properly formed. Prayer is not the place where we attempt to control God. And I want to be very emphatic about that point. That's what James and John wanted to do. They wanted to control and use Jesus as a mechanism for self-interest. Prayer is not the place where we attempt to control God. Prayer is the place where we come to access the mercy of God. If in our prayer time, if we're always constantly just asserting our will in prayer, not much good will come out of that. In fact, what will probably happen is we will just reinforce our own malformation and self-centeredness. In fact, we will sanctify it. And there will be very little, if any, transformation happening in our prayer life. Remember, it's not prayer in and of itself that transforms us. It's proper prayer. And that's why I'm convinced that we need a liturgy of prayer that's wiser than just whatever we cook up for ourselves. And I'm passionate about this because I've lived this. I know what it's like to spend virtually my entire life, to spend my first 25 years of my Christian journey praying James and John type prayers. And all I was doing was just recycling my own issues. Selfish people pray selfish prayers. Greedy people pray greedy prayers. Angry people pray angry prayers. Manipulative people pray manipulative prayers. And that was 25 years of my prayer life for the most part. It was just me like a grapevine sprawled out on the ground without a trellis to cling to. And I needed a structure. I needed a healthy structure of prayer to lift me out of egotistical, self-centered prayer and position me to be fruitful. That's why I teach prayer workshops, by the way. The next one is in September. We can't just keep going through life with James and John kind of praying. Jesus, I know what I need. I know what I'm lacking. Here's my list. Do this, do this, do this. Chop, chop, get to it. That was James and John. But prayer is not the place where we attempt to control God. It's the place where we access the mercy of God. Prayer is where we abandon our own agenda. It's not a means of using omnipotence for self-help agenda. It's mind-boggling that these two guys who have been following Jesus around for 3 years, training to be a disciple, their prayer life's all out of whack, and yet that was my story. And yet here you have a blind beggar, a forgotten man, Bartimaeus, who is just now meeting Jesus for the first time, and he gets it right. I think it might have something to do with the lessons that Bartimaeus had learned as a beggar. When you're a beggar, you are in no position to make demands. All you can do is humbly cry out for mercy. But you're not in a position to start handing out demands. And yet so often, if we're honest, that's what characterizes our prayer life. I'm convinced of this. I'm going to make this statement. I will not try to prove it. I'll just say it. And you can either accept it or reject it. But I'm convinced that no one who in humility asks Jesus for mercy is ever denied. Never. And when I say never, I mean not ever. And you can expand that as much as you want, and I'll say yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. No one who in deep humility ask Jesus for mercy, does Jesus respond to and say, no, I will not have mercy on you. That never happens. If in humility we can say, Jesus, have mercy on me, guess what? Jesus will have mercy on us. In fact, I'll even say it this way. I suppose that the one prayer that we can pray, if we pray it in humility, is guaranteed to be answered, is Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me. We can be sure that the prayer for mercy will always be answered. What we cannot be assured of is what form that mercy will take. We can't assume that we know what the mercy of God will always actually look like in our lives. And when we start making those assumptions, we're right back to asserting our will in prayer. So again, notice the pattern here. Bartimaeus humbly cries out for mercy. It gets Jesus' attention, and Jesus calls him over, and Jesus takes the initiative and says, "What do you want me to do for you?" And only then does Bartimaeus say, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." I know that he says that because that was his specific need, but I want to keep it a little more generalized for us today. I want us to think about prayer today in our own lives, because not everybody here is blind, but we all know what it is to suffer loss. We all know what it is to suffer pain. We all suffer brokenness. We all have suffered failures. In other words, we have all suffered that which we need to recover from. That's Bartimaeus' prayer. Lord, let me recover. We all have something we need to recover from. In other words, we're all in recovery. You know, sometimes we speak of certain people who have been going through addiction and we say, oh, so-and-so is in recovery. Guess what? That's all of us. All of us who come to Jesus, we're all in recovery. And so his first prayer was, Lord, have mercy. His second prayer is, Lord, let me recover. And he does. He recovers his sight, and Jesus says, go your way. Your faith has made you well. And the very last sentence of the story ends with, and he regained his sight and followed him on the way. So Bartimaeus gets up. He's got full 20/20 eyesight. And he joins these thousands of Jewish pilgrims and disciples, and they make the 15-mile trek up to Jerusalem. And they're there the very next day when Jesus rides down the Mount of Olives with their palm branches, and they're shouting, Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, the true Son of David, the King of Israel. And I like to imagine Bartimaeus was in that crowd. So there are three prayers that I locate from this story that I want you to consider this morning in closing. The first prayer is, Lord, have mercy on me. Lord, have mercy on me. Lord, have mercy on me. Let me just make that your prayer right now. This is a good time to stop listening to the sermon. And now let's engage. And I want you to position yourself to encounter Jesus in this moment. I want you to sit up straight and close your eyes. Take a deep breath. Just be in a posture of openness. If it helps, maybe just put your palms open on your lap. And I want you to just, under your breath, very quietly, just begin to say, Lord, have mercy on me. Every few seconds, Lord, have mercy on me. And just keep it open-ended. Maybe you have a specific need. Maybe you need to be healed. Maybe you need money. You need a job. You need a reconciliation with a family member or something. We all have needs, but for now, just keep it open. And just say, Lord, have mercy on me. Because you really do believe that the mercy of Christ is enough. And you're not going to put too much specificity on it prematurely. Because that could quickly lead to your own agenda. And that's what leads Jesus to say, you don't know what you're asking. But if you'll just keep it, Lord, have mercy on me, then Jesus might say, well, now what is it that you want? Let Jesus take the initiative in these matters. Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy on me. Just kind of mutter that prayer a few times. Just, Lord, have mercy. Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me. And then that flows into the second prayer, which is, Lord, let me recover. We've all been broken by a fall. We've all experienced brokenness and hurt, disappointment and failure. We all need to recover. So we go from, Lord, have mercy on me, to now we say, Lord, let me recover. I'm a broken person, but let me recover. I'm deficient, but let me recover. I've come up short, I've come up empty, but let me recover. And then that flows into the third prayer, because the last we hear of Bartimaeus, what's he doing? He's following Jesus on the way. And so the third prayer is, Lord, let me follow you. I don't want to use you, Jesus. I don't want to try to manipulate you. I don't want to try to make you do what I think you ought to do. I just want to follow you. I'm sure I've got all kinds of mistaken assumptions. And I don't want to form you in my image. I want to follow you wherever you lead. So these are the three prayers that we're praying this morning. Lord, have mercy on me. Lord, let me recover. Lord, let me follow you. And I just want you, for the next 30 or 40 seconds under your breath, just pray those prayers in a cycle. Lord, have mercy. Let me recover. Let me follow you. Maybe there's one in particular that kind of rest upon you. I want you to linger with that one for a few moments. Let's take about 30 or 40 seconds and just pray these prayers.
Thank you for listening to today's message. To learn more about Village Church, visit our website at villagechurchburbank.org.